And in the wrap-up position, we have a friend of mine, Nelson Adekoya, who's at CDC, is actually one of the leaders of the section. He's been involved in governing council, section council, and has patiently waited to be able to speak with you.
Thank you.
Since I'm the last speaker, I promised I'm going to get everybody out of here by 2:15. Thanks for coming. My name is Nelson, and I work at the CDC. I have some nutrition at the back of the hall, so because we may not have enough time to go through all that we have to go through this morning, but reading that will provide additional information that may be helpful to you, and also provide information on how you can reach me. This morning we're going to be talking about health assessment and the role of public health and the role of CDC as far as the public health informatics is concerned. Since I work for the federal government, I have nothing to disclose. So the objectives are, I'm going to discuss community health assessment, discuss the CDC's assessment initiative program. I see a couple of colleagues here that I've known over the years that have worked with me on the program, Dr. Badandi, and a couple of other people here too. So I'm going to talk a little bit about public health informatics. I'm going to put this in the context of a community health assessment, as well as talk a little bit about the challenges and benefits that that we have. The mission of public health, as we all know, is to provide conditions in which people are healthy. And the role of the government are in the areas of assessment, policy development, and quality assurance. So in health assessment, what we basically do is collect health status information on the people that we serve and use that information to develop programs. In the CDC's Assessment Initiative Program, this is like a relationship between the CDC, the federal government, and the states to help them develop their infrastructure to address common issues or problems that they have at their levels. And how do we go about doing this? The states go about doing this by working with the local health departments and communities to improve access to all this surveillance data, improve skills to accurately to adequately interpret and understand this data, as well as improve the usage of this data. So in the program, our chart covers all health-related information and also populations that are inadvertently affected, so we can address the health disparities per se. The program has been around since 1992, and to those of you that are aware of it, this program started by NCHS when they realized that, well, federal government was putting together healthy people objectives, yet states were having difficulty analyzing their data and comparing their data to what federal government said, well, this is the goal for this, this is the goal for this, this is the goal for this. So NCHS began the program, but since the beginning of the program, we've had four funding cycles, and we're in the fourth funding cycle now. Actually, the first speaker mentioned Minnesota. Minnesota was one of the states that we have funded, and the community health profile that he mentioned about was one of what the money from the program has been used to accomplish. So since the beginning of the program, we have funded 19 states, and these are the list of those states. Some of the states have been funded twice, but 13 of those states that of the 19 states that we have funded have developed what we call the web-based data query system. And it's very, very surprising that a research was carried out in 2006, and the research indicated that as blessed as we are in the United States, only 27 states have a web-based query system. So there's no reason for this. There's no excuse for saying that one. So we all know what a web-based query system does. And to address issues that we have at the local level, people that are writing grants, people that are at the university, people that are at the health department actually need access to this information so they can actually see what is going on at the local level and statewide, and being able to compare their data to what we have at the national level. So, 9 of the states that the AI has funded actually have incorporated BRFSS data into their web-based query systems. And many states are developing county-level BRFSS data also so that they can have a better understanding of what is going on at the local level. So the states that have the BRFSS incorporated, these are what they have used that that system to accomplish. So now, what is public health informatics? This is a science dealing with the processing and use processing of the data itself. It's when we talk of informatics, we're talking about the application, the science of it. There's a difference between public health informatics and health assessment. One is a tool, one is actually the practice. So, as I said, this is informatics provides science and tools that we need, that we use in community health assessment. So there's a difference between the two. So there are several driving forces for health informatics, and all of these are very, very important because we have issues facing the healthcare, the population that is aging, the healthcare cost, the need to improve cost, quality, and efficiency. All these are driving forces that we consider. Not too long ago, a researcher looked at public health informatics and summarized that despite the potential benefits of electronic health records and other forms of health information technology that we have, U.S. healthcare providers have been very, very slow to adopt them. They went further, provided us barriers to adopting informatics. On top of the list is the capital requirements, high maintenance costs, resistant on the parts of physicians, and unclear ROI, and so on. Then, Kepler in 2008 looked at personal health records, synthesized the data, and also said, well, there's an issue here. So they provided us that, well, in order for us to advance this field, there are things that we need to consider. And these are stuff, or some of the stuff that they found out. So there's a driving force for personal health records. And these include the efficiency, improve patient satisfaction, patient empowerment, improve disease management. But if you look at it, there's a resemblance in the driving force between these two stuff that we have been talking about, two domains that we're talking about. So public health benefits from informatics system, they can help us advance the field of community health assessment when we have data that are well integrated. That is what informatics can do for us. With that, we'll be able to have a complete and very good picture of what we have at the local, at the level that the analysis is being done, and be able to make very good and informed public decision. A very good example is Rhode Island. This is one of the states that we funded. They have a very good web-based credit system. And they have used this connection with BRFSS to develop a minority health reports, which they continuously update. Web-based data query system is very good. We use it every day in a community health assessment, and the emergence of a GIS has also been very, very good, very useful to us. And probably all of you use this in your system, at your place of work. Last year, and this is where this work will eventually end up, I published a request for a research proposal in MMWR. And what we did with that was to look at exactly what is it that we are doing in health assessment that are actually impacting us. Because impact, it's one thing for us to deliver services. It's another thing for us to be able to document that at the end of the day, we are actually making a difference. So This is what we looked at in that request. When I published this, I received about 44 researcher proposals read on. And 9 of these were published this year in the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice. If you are very interested in that, you can still get a copy and read it. And I still have about probably 40 copies left in my office. If you give me your address and you're interested, I can send a copy to you. This is what we're eventually going to do with this work that I'm working on with public health informatics. I've had about 2 or 3 journal articles that are really interested in expanding the work to the framework that I used on this health impact. So if you are interested or you have anything that you are doing in that area that you would like to be considered for publication, I see you at the end of the presentation. So how could informatics and advice community health assessment, they can help improve by improving the timeliness and completeness of reporting in public health surveillance systems. They can reduce data errors that we have and increase our understanding of how meaningfully use electronic health records to improve the population health. So where do we go from here? We wanted to continue encouraging publication of successful approaches in peer-reviewed journals. Also, we wanted to encourage targeted community health assessment activities, since these activities are easier to measure when they are targeted, as opposed to looking at a broad-based one. And also, we wanted to develop strategy to evaluate CHS that did not result in health impacts. So this will allow a comparison with successful approaches. We just don't want to be looking at what is successful every time. So there's a need for us to look at what is not successful so that we can, well, why are they not successful? So we can go ahead and correct those. So lastly, we wanted to facilitate training of planners, demographers, and policy makers and meaningful use of this record, because one way or the other, if you work in public health field, you must have an understanding of what community health assessment is. You must have an understanding of how to read this data. You must have an understanding of how to actually read this data. It's one thing to analyze the data. It's another thing to be able to read into the data that you analyze and being able to make sense of it. This is what actually drives policy. So if you have any questions, I'll be here. And as I mentioned, I have a teacher at the back of the class.
Thank you very much. Well, we've had 4 very interesting presentations, different models about what you do in a downturn environment. We had the first presentation was a tool on how to evaluate what the programs are. The second presentation was an organizational model on how to organize your services. The third presentation was a productivity model, which I'm very interested in because we're looking at the productivity of our providers all the time and how many providers do you need to do the services. And the fourth model was how do you use data and information. And so I think there was the breadth of how you could organize whatever services you have and use specific tools to try to make decisions. So I'm opening it up to questions. If we have any questions about the presentations. Yes?
Question for Jeff. You're talking about prioritizing and where the priorities are going to differ from community to community on these assessments. What is your sense on how CDC categorical funding really sort of plays to that? It seems like it makes it very difficult.
Yeah, it really does. If you're talking about when we look at feasibility and availability of resources, if they're not available because certain categories are funded in certain locations and they aren't in other, absolutely right. I mean, so certain health problems will be addressed in certain communities and they won't be in others simply because of that. And you know, and I think that's very good because one thing we didn't really talk about here is when we do these kinds of prioritization schemes, there ought to be sort of a macro review of these things. So in one community, we might find one result, and in another, we might find another. And so peer categorical funding could be identified as a reason why we can't address that health problem once the university can do another.
Yes.
Nice presentation, Jeff. I also wanted to ask a follow-up question about how do you, maybe speak on the issue of how to prioritize among the elements of prioritization, how to weight, if you will, those issues? Have you any thoughts on that?
Again, I think that's somewhat it's a qualitative issue. You know, what our approach is in developing this tool is that we know that there's no one tool that's going to be right. I know if I created a tool and said, here, run with this, immediately I'll get feedback, it's got the wrong elements, and it's too restrictive. So our approach in quality, what we do is, you know, we provide training, tools, technical assistance, and track that. So those are sort of our tools. So in this one, at least for our office, our goal is to provide technical assistance. So that's a very important question. People are going to ask that, how do we do that? And the best I can do is propose, okay, here's certain ways you could do this, but where you're going is in that. You've got to make a decision whether, you know, community acceptability is more important than a resource issue. How are you going to, the magnitude of this, how do you want to qualify? They're very important decisions. We can provide some guidance on how to do it, but inevitably, it's up to the stakeholders. Whoever's going to be involved in that process can be there and make their decision. I mean, I could say there's certain things that should be in there. I strongly recommend them, but it's really up to the group to decide how to weight those.
Great, thank you. We have a question over there.
My question is for Dr. Adekoya, a former colleague of mine. We worked together on the assessment initiative. I like really, and I understand the relevance of your model. It's, I think, more applicable now that, you know, we are seeing a lot of changes in the budgets, and they are leading to, those changes are leading to changes in systems, and, you know. Question is, when you develop this model, or, you know, you certainly have a lot more than what you showed us.
Yeah.
So, is it more relevant to public health at local level, state level, or is it generic enough to be applicable to all or most levels?
It's applicable, actually, on Wednesday, I'm going to be expanding on this to include or incorporate what Washington State did. They expanded on the framework and added a lot of other information to it, but it's applicable. But the notion is that, well, something is good, something is bad compared to what, we have to be able to demonstrate effectiveness or impact of what is it that we are doing. And if we are not successful at doing it, why are we not successful? So it's a model that we can use either at the local level or the state level or the federal level.
Thank you.
Yes.
I wondered if you tried flipping your priorities model. I mean, many health departments in the last 6 months had to deal with workforce cuts, and so they had to choose what was no longer the priorities. Have you flipped it that way?
Yeah. We haven't used the tool, I think, for that. Well, I think in the one example that we had with one of our population-based health programs, they did use the tool exactly for that. They had constricted or limited resources, and so they wanted to make sure they were focusing exactly on what was important. But it is a broader issue in public health departments in how we prioritize various activities. The next best thing to fund, or if we get cut, what's the first thing that's of least value? But that's very, very, very difficult. In fact, we generally try to avoid those kinds of things. We tend to try to address resource losses through attrition and other things rather than making hard decisions about cutting certain programs. I don't know if you wanted to comment on that, but that was my understanding.
Yeah, we did end up, because we actually did end up with numerical ranking to help us, and then we saw that we really fell into thirds, and we dropped the bottom third of the activities. There were a few that we could drop just because of the decision was made for us too, and it happened to rank also low. So that kind of saved us in our strategic planning there. So.
Yes.
A couple of questions from Virginia. If I understood your presentation correctly, it sounded like a lot of your public health nurse work was strictly in the area around CD. So I'm assuming that there's probably a different workforce population that deals with things such as immunizations and.
We do. They do a lot of CD work, and also they're getting more into a local policy work and working, sitting on coalitions. For example, they might be working with a community organization to get more built environment infrastructure in their communities. They're moving in that direction, and freeing up time to do that was one of the things we want to do the workload survey for. So yeah, we do have other staff for the immunization.
And then tracking their time, we're trying to give relative percentages rather than breaking
yeah.
down in increments of time. Then does the survey tool itself account for 100% of their day? And then if so, does 100% of my day for one nurse equal X hours versus X number of hours for a different nurse?
Okay. I don't know. Most of them had about the same hours of days, but they did work extra if there was a heavy caseload, like an outbreak, which is why it's hard to just sample a small point in time, say a 2-week time period. And so, but it being relative, if someone had an 8-hour day and someone had a 10, I'm still thinking in terms of proportions. So we're really trying to capture proportion, not the exact, once again, not the exact hours. So it helps. I think that's been the hardest thing about presenting the results for this is like, this doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, 90% of their time is spent doing this. It means that that's like 90% of an 8-hour day. It's just that for their typical time that they're spending, and their typical time was about the same. Their typical day was about the same number of hours. Yeah. I don't know if that answers the question.
Any other questions? Yes.
My question is regarding the HIPAA model. I think and you've addressed some of that with the change in administration, like with Mayor Kilpatrick, and I know you said that you're pretty much controlled by the city, the auto industry, everything that's going on there. I guess my question is, how are you able to kind of maintain that interorganizational, you know, relations theory, that whole model when there's such a, it seems like a change within the organization?
Well, that's the importance of the cross-fertilization piece. And that's why we're trying to turn it into a model. So regardless of the administrative changes, that we can always turn back into how it's implemented. So we've weathered that. It's a new office as of 07, but we've been able to work with our policymakers, the mayor's office, often call our office to do work, and we've really turned into a one-stop shop. Because we're connected with the universities, we're connected with the community-based organization, and it's seeing how the outcomes have been used and how, you know, we've been able to move our products along. So I think our office is going to sustain itself just because of the efficiency piece, and we have just products to show that, you know, this model is effective. And hopefully, regardless of who's in office and what's going on, we can have this to be able to implement regardless of that. Did I answer your question? Okay.
Yes.
I just wanted to say one other thing with regard to heroin, because I work with the WIC program at the City of Detroit, and we're coordinating with HIPAA. And I think that there's also commitment from the managers and the programs who are not political appointees or not connected with the politics but are just connected with the program, that this is a really important model and it works well to serve our purposes in terms of our data analysis in our programs as well. And I think that's one of the ways that it can sort of weather the political storms is when you get commitment from the programmatic people. I'm working with some of the universities that I got hooked up through going to the HIPAA meetings and mapping out some of our data and everything, and so we're able to weather because the commitment is brought down from the politics to the people who are actually doing the real work.
Yes, thank you. I think that's a very interesting point. I work in the New York City system, and whenever there's a change of administration, the top level changes, but it's the folks who are actually carrying out the program who have the memory and who have set up the procedures, and sometimes you get strategic direction changes and sometimes you don't. And I agree with you completely. That's an excellent point. Any other questions? Well, I want to thank you all, and I want to thank the panelists. These were four excellent presentations, and keep up the good work.